Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Nervous Herbalist, a podcast for Chinese medicine practitioners who like herbs and want to learn more about their function, their history, and treatment strategies to use in the clinic. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Nervous Herbalist. My name is Travis Kern, and I am here with
Travis Cunningham.
And we are going to talk to you guys today about some case studies that are connected to dizziness and vertigo.
Yes.
What do we got, T?
Yep. So I've got two cases for us today. And like in similar other previous shows, I have one simple case, relatively simple case, and then one that's a little bit more complex.
All right. Well, let's start with the simple one so we can re-hit some of the important highlights from the theory discussion.
Okay.
And then we'll go into the more complex one.
So this case is a person who came in. Actually, the chief complaint is insomnia. But one of the key symptoms is the feeling of dizziness or the feeling of unsteadiness that this person's had. Mm-hmm. And this feeling has been with her throughout the years, like over the course of the last few years, but it gets better and then it gets worse. Okay. And it's been particularly noticeable for her.
The dizziness part.
So it is like even though it wasn't her chief complaint, it's a very relevant part of the case.
Mm, okay.
So the history is the patient reports difficulty, both falling and staying asleep, feeling fatigued. And this has been present the last 2 weeks. Once she falls asleep, she can usually stay asleep, but it takes about an hour or 2 hours to fall. And sometimes the patient will also wake up early, around 5 a.m., which will leave her feeling very tired the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So she has this history of feeling lightheaded on and off for many years. And she says this feeling has gotten distinctly worse over the last few weeks within the same timeline of the sleep.
So the sleep problem that she came in for was new, though? Like, this hadn't been...
Correct.
This wasn't, like, multi-year?
Not a chronic thing.
Okay.
Nope. That's unusual for her. But she later told me that she had been... she had gotten a variety of testing done, including a CAT scan and tests for POTS to try to understand why she was feeling lightheaded, and they had all come back inconclusive.
Okay. Yeah.
So... Okay. So other symptoms, the patient has felt warmer recently, despite the seasonal movement into cooler temperatures. I should probably mention the date. So this was November of last year, 2025,
okay.
11/14/2025. And this is a 40-year-old female.
Mm-hmm.
She has thirst. She has urination that can be frequent and urgent.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also noticed some acid reflux at night after she lays down to sleep, which again is atypical for her. It's not something she has often, but mm-hmm. has been there more the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
So I checked the pulses next, and the pulses were the first position on each side was relatively superficial. So the Tsun positions are superficial. The rest of the pulse is relatively deep.
Okay.
And then...
And in general, what does that indicate to you?
It indicates there's something going on the surface, but maybe there's also a piece of the pathology that... Well, if there's depth to the pulse and their superficial, official nature to the pathology, there's likely a water component to what's going on. Like there's something superficial happening, but there's also some kind of water or dampness that's changing the depth of the pulse in certain places.
Got it. So you feel that pulse and your mind is already thinking like, there's probably a water thing here.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So check the abdomen. The abdomen, there is a... sort of like it feels like there's like a water balloon type of thing around the stomach, the epigastric area, mm-hmm. where it's not quite like a hard P or a hard glomus. where you feel like the line of the tissue that's really pulled taut and is prominent, but it feels like something is there, but that something is softer, like it mm-hmm. yields to pressure and it's distinct from the tissue directly around it.
So it's something, it feels like a substantive mass, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But it's not hard. Got it.
So I don't know how they would treat this in traditional Fukushin, but I usually see this in water patterns where mm-hmm. there's water pooling in the stomach. Mm-hmm. I also asked the patient if she had recently drank water and she said no. So that's another indicator, because you can have false positives on the abdomen with splash sound water stuff.
If they've just had a big glass of water.
If they've just drank water, yeah.
Right, sure. And so the soft P, in contrast to the hard P, the one that has more mm-hmm. cleared ridges, edges and stuff, is the hard P showing that things are actually more, there's dryness in the fluid problem?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah.
Usually there's dryness for hard P, either excess or deficient dryness right. in the middle jaw.
Right.
And then for soft P, there's either stagnation or you can see soft P in some deficiency patterns as well.
Got it. Mm-hmm. But wetter, nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. Yep. So we've got this pulse that's indicating a damp fluid metabolism issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the abdomen check seems mm-hmm. to also support that.
Right. And there's a little more detail in the abdomen. So there is a water splash sound, right, also. And this patient has a distinct coolness in the temperature of the skin, kind of just below the epigastric area between, let's say, CV15 and the umbilicus. So that area there is distinctly cooler than the rest of the abdomen.
Got it. Any like clamminess or anything like that too, or just cool?
It actually was a little bit clammy. You can tell that the surface is open, that she's able to sweat. She's mm-hmm. there's like a little bit of light perspiration there.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So now armed with the pulse and the abdomen.
Yeah.
What next?
So I wrote the formula Wulingsan,
okay,
straight up. And I find that, I think I mentioned this before, but I find that the abdominal pattern for Wulingsan often has this feeling of coolness to the skin, which I don't know is written in any textbooks, but it's something that I've noticed. You can see that, of course, with other formulas, but with Wulingsan, there tends to be a coolness in that area, sort of between the epigastric and the umbilicus. Sometimes it's a little bit more like surrounding the umbilicus, like right. where we would imagine the small intestine to be.
Yeah.
But in this case, it was a little further up.
So did she have thirst in the discussion?
She did have thirst.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then urinary difficulty?
Yep.
And in her case, the urinary difficulty was what, just infrequency or frequency or what?
Hers was urgency. And frequency. So she would drink and then have to quickly pee, go, and then have to quickly go again.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay. So we've got all the core indicators, symptom side for Wulingsan, thirst, mm-hmm. urinary difficulty. Then we have the objective signs that are indicating a fluid metabolism problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then additionally on the abdomen, your added observation that there's that sort of epigastric coolness further underlines Wulingsan.
Correct.
Yep. Okay. So how much did you give her?
I gave her, 8 grams twice a day in granules. So standard dosage for Wulingsan, nothing different. 8 grams twice a day for 5 days. She was going to come back and see me. She had already made another appointment. And this is when we were transitioning away from her insurance company. So we were kind of ending treatment with a bunch of people, right?
Yeah.
And this person's treatment was going to, she was trying to get in and kind of use up her benefit before that timeline. So she had already made another appointment 5 days from this one. And so I just wrote the formula for 5 days.
Got it. Just because you knew that she'd be back in.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And then the standard doses for Wulingsan, just for everybody, these are of course the ratios we use in granule.
Yeah. So I use Guajir 6, Fuling 9, Baiju 9, Juling 9, and Zixia 15.
Okay. And then so that those ratios at 8 grams twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
So 5 days later, she comes back in, which was already scheduled. Normally, if that hadn't been the case, you would have just given it to her for a week.
Yeah, a week or 2 weeks, you know, depending on the case. Wulingsan, I feel pretty confident in diagnosing now. So I would feel comfortable giving that for longer if I needed to.
And it's super well tolerated by basically everyone.
Yes.
It's incredibly rare to give Wulingsan to someone and have them like have weird digestive response.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So she came back 5 days later.
Came back 5 days later and she noticed a dramatic improvement in her her sleep, her lightheadedness, basically everything.
Nice.
She had no reflux after the first 2 days of taking it. Mm-hmm. Her sleep dramatically improved and the feeling of lightheadedness or like her uneasiness with her orientation was way better. And she was most impressed by that changing actually, because that had been the thing that had been there kind of for years. She'd sort of gotten used to being slightly disoriented frequently. And this had dramatically changed that, like within just a few days. She was also, she said she was less nauseous than she was before, which we didn't discuss in the first appointment. She didn't tell me she was nauseous and I didn't ask for whatever reason. She spoke at length about her sense of relief that orientation was improving and with such a short time on the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't typically think of Wulingsan being an insomnia formula, right?
Of course, yeah.
But in this case, you have a direct impact on fluid metabolism, which makes it easier for the fire phase to calm down, right? And there we know too that in this case, there is some kind of temperature influence that the Wulingsan pattern is having. The person's reported that she was feeling warmer. So she doesn't have a fever necessarily, but she's been feeling warmer recently, despite it being cold. Like this is in November.
Yeah.
Right. And there's this accumulation of water that's taking place in the middle jaw, which then makes it harder for the heart and kidney to communicate. One of the main things that can obstruct heart and kidney from communicating is middle jaw problems. Mm-hmm. So that could be a digestive thing. That could be like a Shishintong pattern, right? Or it could be that the water is actually accumulating there for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And if you get rid of whatever's stopping that, it can help the person to sleep better.
Yeah.
And I believe difficulty with sleep is in one of the Wulingsan lines in the Shanghanlun.
Right. But of course, relative to the dizziness component of things.
Yeah.
Right. So her chief complaint, of course, was insomnia, but we're talking about it in this context because it also helped with this sense of disorientation that she had.
Correct.
Which was sort of expected, but incidental to the chief complaint.
Right.
Which is to say, like, the goal was to get her to sleep better.
Mm-hmm.
But in giving her this water metabolism improver, right, mm-hmm. we were able to mess with or improve, change the disorientation. Why do you think that aspect happened? Is it still just the heart kidney not communicating,
I think,
correction that changes the disorientation?
I think there is a dynamic. So from a five phase point of view, I think there is a dynamic between fire and water that's mm-hmm. being corrected.
Mm-hmm.
And the orientation of dizziness is the result of water's influence on fire. This kind of thing. So if we went back to the 19 lines on pathology, right, we didn't see any lines that mentioned water, but we did see a bunch of lines that mentioned muddled consciousness, upsurge, and things like that
mm-hmm.
belonging to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And again, teaching the way that I was taught to interpret those is to be very broad in the interpretation. So there may be an aspect of the fire phase that's being affected, but the fire phase can be affected by itself in deficiency by any of the other four phases and can have symptoms as a result of that, mm-hmm. right? So I'm thinking of that being part of that relationship.
Got it. Okay. So did you continue the Wulingsan?
Yeah. So I gave it to her for two more weeks and then this is when we were discontinuing with her insurance. So I had a phone follow-up with her, 12/5. So this would have been a little more than 2 weeks after the last appointment. The patient reported a continued improvement of all the symptoms. She was especially happy about the improvement in her balance and sense of steadiness, which had been a problem for years. She was doing really well. She'd actually been off of the herbs for just a few days and was still doing fine. Mm-hmm. So at this stage, I told her, let's go off of the herbs. If the symptoms recur or come back, please give me another call immediately. But otherwise, let's try out without any herbs. So this was, again, early December. I did have a contact with her in early 2026. I think it was the first or second week of January. Mm-hmm. And would have been the second week, actually. And she hadn't had a recurrence of those symptoms. She contacted me for a different thing, but I did follow up with her and confirmed that it didn't continue, or it hadn't up to that point. Now, we're speaking to you now the first week of February in 2026. So there hasn't been that much time that's passed for a chronic problem, but at least up to now, that's been a pretty good, I think, result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So basically 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Of Wulingsan.
Yep.
Fundamentally, as far as we know, corrected the disorientation dizziness.
Mm-hmm.
And also helped her sleep.
Yes.
Which, of course, was the thing that she really wanted in the end.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I would say, just to add to context as well, because I was thinking about it when you said that we were transitioning away from insurance, not that this is specifically related to dizziness, but if you're listening out there and you're thinking, wait, do they use insurance for herbs? The answer is no, we don't, because no insurance companies pay for herbs. But when patients come in for acupuncture visits and we bill for acupuncture, we do herb consultations with people at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we sort of do double duty. Some people think that that's giving away herb consultation for free. We think it's a way to get people what they need while also using their insurance. I think, like, you know, inquiring minds can disagree for sure. But mm-hmm. what it meant in this particular patient's case is that we weren't accepting her insurance anymore for acupuncture, mm-hmm. which meant she wasn't coming into the office.
Right.
To get acupuncture, which mm-hmm. is when we then talk about herbs. Mm-hmm. So that's fundamentally what was happening there. So if you're wondering, like, wait a minute, I'm not using insurance for herbs. That's right. That's because you can't, mm-hmm. which is really unfortunate. It's also worth noting, though, on the business side of things, that people who have FSAs and HSAs, so flex spending accounts and health savings accounts, they can often use that money to pay for custom herb formulations. You might just need to write a letter for their FSA manager to say, hey, this has been custom prescribed for my patient. And so that's one of the ways that people can use money that they have to pay for herbs and also to potentially pay for the herb consultation as well. We know for sure they can do it with the herbs. Consultation, sometimes the administrators are a little bit more sticky about, mm-hmm. but it's definitely within the rules to use FSA, HSA money for custom prescribed herbal formulas.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. PSA for the people. Well, how about you take us into the complicated case?
Okay.
So this, and maybe also lay out, like, is this complicated symptom-wise, or are there other aspects that made it complicated?
Symptom-wise, it's not so complicated. This is complicated because this is a person who I don't want to reveal, but it's somebody who I've known for a long time. And the case was done over the phone for the most part. So at one point in time, I was able to meet with them in person and evaluate them. But the vast majority of the case was distal. So that's what makes it complicated. I didn't have pulses or abdomens or anything like that to right. really be able to work. But it still is a good case, I think, for what we're talking about.
Okay. So walk us through it.
So this is a 65-year-old male. The first time I made contact about this particular thing was in November, early November in 2022. So this is a few years ago. The history is 2 months prior to the conversation, the patient experienced an extreme episode of vertigo. They were driving in their car to meet an agent for one of their business trips. And this guy started to feel his sense of balance alter, which was not something he had experienced before. Mm-hmm. He pulled over on the highway just in time for the vertigo to really kick in. And it was like it's like he was doing cartwheels. Like room was spinning and he was flipping, like his awareness was flipping up and down. This is how he described it. Very intense. He opened up the door and vomited, and then just like did whatever he could to like breathe. And within 5 or 10 minutes, the experience gradually abated. Mm-hmm. It was pretty extreme and scary because he was driving.
And he's never had anything like this before.
He had never had anything like this before at all. Mm. Now, this person, context would be, there was a little extra stress in his life. He's getting ready for retirement. And so he was trying to finish things up this year and getting ready for retirement and feeling pressure and all of that stuff. So that could be a little bit relevant. Since the initial episode, the patient had experienced 2 more instances like the one that I just described mm-hmm. within the 2 months that preceding the first incident and the conversation that I had with them, though not quite as intense and not while he was driving. So one of them, I think, happened at work. The other one happened when he was at home. In between the flares or the dramatic vertigo experiences, there was a sort of gradual feeling or a constant feeling of disorientation, low grade disorientation, like a hue, if you will, of uneasiness. And that feeling also, I think people experience these things and then they're more aware of like, how am I? Is it happening again? Like there's a little bit of this kind of thing that happens to people. So he was experiencing that and that made him not very confident about driving and things like that, which was a big deal because he would, for the last part of his time at work, he was doing these business trips. So he did go to his PCP and was diagnosed with Meniere's disease. And he was given basically acute medication to manage the flares if he felt like it was acutely coming on. I think they gave him something like diazepam, so a pretty strong thing to manage the acute flares. But then they didn't really give him anything to manage the chronic nature of the condition other than dietary advice. And the dietary advice was like, avoid sodium.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
Yeah.
Because they're like playing, they're thinking blood pressure is a component and all that stuff. Yeah.
So this is the context by which I was talking to this person. So with inquiry, the patient reported generally running cooler in temp, but having periods of feeling warm or hot, particularly if they get overheated, they can kind of, he actually said he gets flushes of heat, like almost, and typically at night. Mm-hmm. Almost like a hot flash, but he didn't use that language. I think generally men have a harder time saying that they have hot flashes, but similar experience. Urination was hesitant. The patient has an enlarged prostate, so he gets up 3 to 4 times a night to pee and has a little bit of inhibition with the urination. Sleep. The patient has extremely vivid dreams, and he has night terrors or fighting dreams mm-hmm. where he's like in a battle mm-hmm. and wakes himself up shouting or whatever. It's kind of an interesting thing. Told me some interesting stories about that. And then bowel movements, generally pretty normal, one time a day, but he can skip days, and it could be a little on the drier side, more dry than wet. And I inquired about palpitations. He gets some palpitations occasionally, especially brought on by exercise, mm-hmm. but they're not very frequent, like maybe once a month or something like that.
Okay.
wasn't able to feel the pulses or check the abdomen because of the distance, right? So the first formula that I wrote him was Chaihu Jia Longgu Muli Tang without the Dahuang. I probably could have left the Dahuang in at a very low dose, but I chose not to.
Why?
Because I wasn't able to evaluate him in person, so I wanted to be a little more careful. And usually, if I'm being careful, I will take the Dahuang out just because most people don't need it today.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's very clear dry constipation as an active thing. So
like it's ongoing.
It's ongoingly dry, constipated. There's a little bit of a tendency for that in this patient, but it's not active. So I don't want to push the bowels too much.
So without having pulse and without having abdomen, why reach for a Chaihu formula? What about the symptoms that is telling you that?
So if it's acute, right? We talked about if the vertigo is acute, it's likely either a Xiaoyang disharmony connected to a Xiaoyang disharmony or a water pathology. And right. Then there's tendencies for which water pathologies, which formula patterns tend to be in play, Wulingsan being one of them. But this patient didn't have particularly strong thirst. There was a urinary thing going on.
Sure.
But there wasn't any other orientation around water being an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I didn't write this down, but I'm pretty sure I inquired about sloshiness in the belly and things like this, things that would make me think more Wulingsan or like that. Palpitations could be treated by either formula, but it's again, kind of rare. Like he's not having palpitations daily or every week even.
So the absence of thirst, lack of palpitations.
And the dryness, the general tendency in dryness for the bowel. Doesn't suggest that
fluid metabolism.
Doesn't suggest pure fluid metabolism.
Gotcha. So you're thinking Xiaoyang disharmony.
Yeah.
Therefore Chaihu Tang formula.
Mm.
And then this particular one because, you know, versus Xiao Chaihu Tang or something.
Sure. Well, there's extremely vivid dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So extremely vivid dreams with a heat presentation that tends to get worse at night, right? So the patient's tends to be cold, but worse. There's flushes of heat at night.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think Yang is having a tendency to float and needs the Guizhi, Longgu, and Muli together, that kind of combination. So that could be Guizhi, Jia, Longgu, Muli, Tang. That could be Guizhi, Gan, Sao, Longgu, Muli, Tang. That could be Chaihu, Jia, Longgu, Muli, Tang, because Chaihu, Jia, Longgu, Muli, Tang also has Guizhi in it.
Right.
Right. It just hit all of the things the best, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, you could get Guizhi Longgu Muli and Guizhi Jia Longgu Muli Tang, but then you wouldn't have the Chaihu.
You wouldn't have the Chaihu, and you wouldn't have naturally the Fuling, right? The other thing that's in Chaihu Jia Longgu Muli Tang is Fuling.
Mm-hmm.
So it also treats difficult urination.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, if there's a prostate issue, I like the fact that we have a higher dose of Muli with the salty flavor to soften. So if there's a hardness that's, in this case, the prostate, but somewhere in the body that's preventing fluids from moving, right? I like the idea of adding the salty in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a bunch of different formulas, but if we have alternating hot and cold, if we have sleep dysfunction, if we have urination issues, Chaihu Jia Longgu Muli Tang hits all of those automatically rather than having to build a formula from three formulas. You can just use one.
Yeah, which is always, from our point of view, the simpler approach is the better one.
Yeah.
Cleaner, tighter. Okay, so how long, what was the dose and how long did he take it for?
So I gave this formula at a higher dose. I did 8 grams. This was a granule, but I did 8 grams 3 times a day for 14 days.
Okay. Because of the intensity of the symptoms?
Because of the intensity of the symptoms.
Okay.
And I wanted to tell the patient, this is a strong dose of the formula and mean it, right? And Chaihu Jia Longgu Muli Tang is a larger formula automatically. So it's one that if we're treating accurately, if we're using the ratio of 5:1 as a rough equivalency with granule to bulk, you really have to increase the dosage of it for it to be anywhere close to a bulk dosage. Right. And even then, you know, you can argue that it's right. not it's as
still,
strong. It's
still going to be less strong, but yeah. at least we're trying to approximate the bulk dosage.
Trying to approximate it. I will say the only dosage thing that I shifted here is I upped the dosage of Fuling and Guajer.
Okay.
Which Why? Is something that I will do. Fuling, because of the intensity of the water symptoms, especially with the hesitant urination. And the Guajer, I just upped to 12, which is the palpitation dose of Guajer.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Up from 9.
Up from 9. Up yeah. from 9. Okay. Fuling, I went up to 24, which is more mimicking the dosage of Fuling in Lingui Cao Zao Tong. So this is kind of like the fluid accumulation is doing something to aggravate the mind, right? And because this is an upsurge condition that has to do with some kind of fluid thing, Fuling is also like bland and sweet. So it's not too, it's not going to flush the fluids out extremely.
Right.
It's going to kind of calmly, softly open them.
Yeah. Bland's going to leach them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So how long?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And then what did we get?
So reevaluation in 2 weeks. The patient has not experienced a vertigo flare in the last 2 weeks. So that's positive. Now keep in mind, within 2 months, he had experienced 3 flares. So it's not that unusual for him to go 2 weeks without a flare.
Right.
Right. But he also noticed that the dizziness and steadiness was better chronically. So that low-grade feeling mm-hmm. of unsteadiness mm-hmm. had improved.
Right.
Additionally, his sleep had gotten a little deeper. He was still having the night terror things, but he said he's waking fewer times at night and urinating less at night.
Right.
So I'm counting that all as a positive.
Yeah, I mean, the results, it sounds like, at least initially, is that the disharmony is beginning to restore itself.
Yes.
And the fluid side of it, though not Wuling level fluid problem,
right,
is also starting to adjust a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So then what?
So then 2 weeks, so I refilled for 2 weeks and then followed up on 12-5. And at this time, the patient caught a cold, and I had to treat him for the cold.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the dizziness and vertigo symptoms did not get worse during the cold or after the cold.
That's good.
So that was pretty cool.
Were you using Chayu formula to treat the cold?
I was.
Also yes. helpful then.
Also helpful. Yeah. I wrote down here I used a triple yang method. So probably Chayu Guajer Tong plus Gegen or Chayu Guajer Ganjang Tong, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's still getting that Chayu harmonizing effect.
Right.
Just relative to the cold now.
Right.
Okay, that's good.
Yep.
So it gets better from the cold.
Gets better from the cold. And then I sort of lost track of him after that for basically the next 6 months. Mm. And then the next time I talked to him about this particular issue was in the summer. Let's see, 7/27. So a little more than 6 months later. Actually. And in the time in between, he hadn't been experiencing vertigo at all.
Nice.
And the dizziness or the unsteadiness, the low grade stuff had mostly been gone.
Okay.
But a week before I started talking to him, he started to experience the unsteadiness again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a vertigo flare.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is what prompted him to reach out to me specifically about this.
So basically a month's worth of the original formula
mm-hmm.
stopped the pattern.
Yep.
For all intents and purposes for about 6 months.
Yep.
Okay. So then the unsteadiness reasserts, the flare occurs, they reach back out.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any changes in the background? Because you mentioned in the beginning that there was like stress and stuff that was leading to this, lots of travel. Was there an inciting incident to the flare?
This time there wasn't.
So it just seemingly came out of nowhere.
Yeah. And in a way, the opposite. This person retired mm-hmm. in between that time, right? They were preparing to retire before, but they had met their retirement date by then.
Yeah.
And were adjusting to, like, this is the summertime. It's their favorite time of year. So you wouldn't expect this kind of thing to come back from stress
right.
alone.
Right.
Unless you think about the stress that people go through when they retire, which, you know, is a whole other conversation,
yeah.
their sort what of their drive in life yeah. and all this yeah, kind yeah. of thing. But the other way that I'm making sense of the flare at this time is this is around when yang starts to float seasonally.
Mm, yeah.
And
it starts to become pernicious yang.
It can become pernicious yang, exactly. So mm. I'm thinking that the flare is connected actually to that. So let me talk about what's happened. So the patient experienced a flare of vertigo again. This time he was at home, but a similar situation occurred. The room was spinning and he did end up vomiting. He did say that it wasn't as intense as the experiences 6 months prior, but he also had medication to take acutely for it. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, the room is still spinning and still vomited.
Yeah. So it's pretty bad.
Pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah. He mentioned he had been feeling a little unsteady a week or so beforehand, which he noticed when he would drive his car to the gym. So he'd be, which isn't that far away from his house, but it's like, he would be concerned about like, ooh, am I going to be okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then he would just kind of like breathe and move through it. And it didn't end up flaring, but eventually apparently it did. So, because I wasn't in person, I wrote him exactly the same formula. I sent it to him, this time for 3 weeks, in which time I would be visiting and could, check him out in person. This particular place that he lives. So I was able to reevaluate with the patient in person. This time he had been taking the herbs for 3 weeks. There had been no flares since that time, but there was still a low-grade feeling of unsteadiness.
Mm-hmm.
The urination symptoms were the same as before, so still having to get up at night. Basically, when he was on the herbs, they were helpful, but it didn't feel like they were as helpful this time for the urination stuff.
Okay.
But there had been no vertigo flare other than the first one that we mentioned. And he said that he was feeling better on the herbs overall. Take that for what you will. I checked the pulse this time because I was in person. The pulse, to my surprise, was very deep and deficient. Mm-hmm. Very shoe. There was a little bit of tension in the right chur. So that was the only big feature in the pulse. Everything else was deep and very deficient, very weak feeling. Basically what I did is I wrote him Shen Qi Wan at this point. So my thought was, we likely treated the acute flare presenting with this triple yang, xiao yang pattern.
Right.
And then we need to treat the deficiency underneath that.
Particularly indicated by the very deep pulse.
Particularly indicated by the very deep and weak pulse. Yes.
Got it. Okay. So Shen Qi Wan standard numbers.
Shen Qi Wan standard numbers. Yep.
For how long?
I gave this to him for a month.
Okay.
Shen Qi Wan pattern is not going to change quickly.
8 grams twice a day?
8 grams twice a day.
Okay. What'd we get?
So at the end of that time, I checked back in with him. He said the feeling, basically he was doing better. The feeling of unsteadiness that was low grade had improved. He felt an improvement in his energy level. He was still getting up at night 1 to 2 times, but an improvement from the 3 to 4. And he actually said he's feeling a little bit better about his transition into retirement, just sort of feeling better about his life.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time I chose to discontinue the treatment and told him to reach back out if there was a further problem.
So considering the many formulas that exist to treat deficiency patterns.
Yeah.
Why Shen Qi Wan?
Yeah, for a few reasons. Firstly, you know, it's been said that Shenshiwan is the formula that is the quintessential representative for male-bodied people deficiency. So it's kind of the goal. If you have a goal formula to get somebody on chronically who's a male-bodied person, Shenshiwan is a good one to shoot for because it treats cold water, it treats deficiency in the blood, right? There's a lot of herbs to build up the blood, the Shanyao, the Shanjiyu, the Shengdi, all building up the blood. It does a little bit of blood movement with the Mudan Pi, right? And the Guizhi, you could say, moves the blood a little bit, but it's mostly tonifying and strengthening and helping all of the different aspects of where the male-bodied physiology tends to go off, right?
Right. But a lot of times those blood-nourishing aspects are difficult for wetter people, weaker digestive people to actually metabolize.
Yep.
So that's what you mean with sort of like getting to Shenshiwan. Like
exactly.
We can't just maybe open the door with it.
Yeah, so let's say I examine that person's pulses and situation, and it was very deficient, very weak, and the digestion was weaker and wetter. I would start with Jen Wutong then.
Right.
Because
that's
not Shenshiwan.
The water side of the deficiency problem.
Yeah, and there's not as much material moistening or building in that formula.
Right.
It's easier for the body to tolerate if there's weaker digestion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With maybe over time getting to Shenshiwan if the digestion stabilizes.
Correct. Yeah. So if the digestion gets better, then we could go to Shenshiwan after.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then the patient has reported back like no return of these symptoms?
The patient has, during the time that I was talking to them about this, they reported no symptoms. So the next time I had seen them, which was about 6 months later, they were good. They didn't have any unsteadiness. They didn't have any problem with the dizziness, anything like that. The last time I saw this person, which was a couple months ago now, they actually reported to me that some of that unsteadiness had started to come back. So they probably need to be treated again more chronically.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we'll have more updates to add to that into the future, but I think we've got a decent spread of examples of how some of the formulas we talked about in the theory section can be used and applied in real life patient cases. Any other summary bits or components to add?
Yeah, the reason that I wanted to share this last case, despite it not being the perfect case to share, given there's not diagnostic parameters for the first parts of it and stuff, is to illustrate a learning point for me around treating the chronic nature of these patterns and how important that is, and likely that you would need to treat it. Like, I think we could probably get this person to a point where they're not experiencing that unsteadiness or that dizziness, but they might have to take that Shenshiwan formula for a long time, months and months and months, and maybe at a lower dose toward the end. But it would be a good formula to keep them on for a really long time. Now, the patient has to be compliant in that, right?
Yeah.
And the only place we talk about compliance a lot with our residents and things like that, you and I don't struggle to have our patients be compliant very much anymore, right?
Yeah. It might be that you could eventually shift this person to the actual wan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So to go from the granule to the actual wan, and then that could be, you know, long-term administration. Because, of course, like, that's likely why it's a wan.
Yes.
In the first place, is because people would need to take it for a long time, and it's much easier to get compliance out of someone if they just have to chew up three little honey pills two times a day or something than to actually drink granules constantly.
Yep.
Nice. Okay. Well, I think that wraps it up for our case studies. As always, thanks for listening to The Nervous Herbalist. If you guys have any questions or suggestions for topics, you can send us a message at thenervousherbalist@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from the listeners. And as always, please rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts. And we will catch you next time. I'm Travis Kern.
I'm Travis Cunningham.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.